Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to A Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and today is the latest instalment of Axsome's Daily Podcasts. It's something that we've started over the last few weeks, and I think now that we've started, we'll keep them up. Beyond the lockdown and beyond the coronavirus, we will keep up the daily podcasts. Now, these will include feature shows with some of the contributors of A Celtic State of Mind, such as Celtic by Numbers, which is the statistical show, Scream a Celica, which is Kevin Graham's Music Stroke Celtic show, and many others, as well as historical content, such as this evening's episode, and we'll also have our regular special guests. As we approach the 31st anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster, we will be speaking next week to Professor Phil Scratton, author of Hillsborough, The Truth. Last week, we uploaded the interview we did with Professor Willie Maley, and this week we have spoken to financial expert David Lowe. New content is added to A Celtic State of Mind's website on a daily basis. That's axsome.net. You can subscribe to A Celtic State of Mind on the website, on our YouTube channel, and also on Speaker. And we're currently working on unseen Celtic footage that will be uploaded to our YouTube channel in the coming weeks. Tonight we delve into the Neely Mauchin interview archives to focus on not only the emergence of the Quality Street Kids, but also Celtic's second European Cup final in 1970. And we ask Bobby Lennox and Evan Williams, where did it all go wrong? Bobby Lennox, the European Cup winning side, were famously all homegrown players. Will we ever see your like again?
I would really, really doubt that. There's so many foreign players coming in, and it'd be difficult to do that, I think. I mean, I was a real outsider. I was 30 miles away in soccer, so I was an outsider. The boys that won the European Cup all kind of played against each other, knew each other from when they were younger, and I was a kind of outsider, and that was only 30 miles away, so I really think they should do that again.
Jockstein immediately developed another group of homegrown players called the Quality Street Gang. What were your memories of that crop of players?
I thought they were terrific, all the boys, you know, Danny, Kenny, Big George, Davey, Victor. They looked really, real talented boys. But I think, and it's not for me to say, but I think he could have kept the older team a year or two longer and let the boys get through better, a bit better, you know. But they were always going to be super players because they were great young lads. And all good lads as well, all willing to listen and learn.
And were you able to assist these young guys coming through the ranks?
Well, I'd need to say they were easy to help because they had natural ability and they were dead keen to learn. I mean, Kenny and Danny and boys like that, they were just Nothing was a problem for them. I played wide a few games in training games. You played against Danny and you think, well, I'm an experienced player, I've got a European Cup medal, I've played for Scotland against England at Wembley. But this boy wants to kick me and he wants to run me off the ball. So, I mean, they were just wanting to learn whatever they could. They were just great.
The Lions regularly played the Quality Street Kids up at Barrafield. Was that your hardest game of the week?
Oh, they could play it, they really could. But I think Big Jock mixed the teams quite a lot, and they'd get into our team, so they were used to playing with the guys. But they were all terrific talents.
What can you recall, Bobby, of the 1969 Scottish Cup final, and in particular, the performance of young George Connolly?
He just took it so casual and so easy. George had great ability. I mean, he was wonderful with the ball at his feet, and he was so laid back. I mean, for the third goal, he just got the ball around the goal and put it in the net as if, I'm just up the park here. He was just great. So cool, Big George.
Now, 3 years after we were triumphant in Lisbon, we suffered the disappointment of the 1970 European Cup final defeat to Feyenoord. What do you think Celtic could have done differently?
I think we didn't play particularly well on the night, and I think Feyenoord did play well on the night. I thought they deserved to win the cup on the night, but I still feel had we got to the final whistle with a draw, we could have maybe done better in the replay. But everybody thought we were certainties. But I know that most of the guys didn't think we were certainties. We knew you don't get to the European Cup final and be a bad team, so we knew we had a game in our hands, and we scored first. And I think the worst thing that happened was they scored quite quickly after us, if I remember rightly, and that didn't help. And then, as I say, they scored right at the death, and it was all over then, you know.
Do you feel that Jockstein seen this as an opportunity to dismantle the Lions and start afresh by bleeding in some of the youngsters?
Well, we didn't think that, but obviously it was when you see the team changing so quickly after that. But there's a lot of experience in the team, and they boys needed the experience to help them coming through. But I suppose that was a defining moment when they decided we better start bringing the boys through.
Now, a number of the Quality Street kids moved on for big money down to England. Had we kept that group together, what do you think we might have achieved?
Well, you just never know. Football's a strange game. You know, teams get better and better. Other clubs get stronger and stronger. So you're really not sure what's going to happen in the future in football. It's a hard thing to say. But they guys were great, so they could have got better. But I still feel as though we needed some of the more experienced guys round about them. So a few of the boys left at the one time, which probably to let the young boys through, but I don't know if it helped the club or not.
How big a loss to Celtic and Scottish football was George Connolly?
I think Big George could have done anything. He could have achieved anything. But how would I say? Some days he came to the park and wasn't up for it, didn't feel right up for it. Just lovely, lovely guy. I mean, I thought he was terrific. But I think George could have been a great player, better than he was if he'd stayed longer. But what can you say? It's your personality.
One player who didn't move down south was Danny McGrain. He's often been regarded as a world-class player. Is that something you would agree with, Bobby?
Never liked him. Danny could have played in any team. Danny was world-class, there's no doubt about that. He was I like saying this, he was a wonderful goal scorer as well. I think he thought he scored 8 goals or something. I love getting them on about that. But Danny was the man. I thought Danny was great, and a great captain as well.
When you think back to Neely Mawkins' role on the coaching staff, how important was he to the victory in Lisbon?
The victory in Lisbon, Neely was just important every day. Everywhere you went, Neely was there, always a smile on his face. You never got him any different. He was just a great guy about the place. If anybody had a problem, they'd go to Neely before they go to the boss. Everybody went and spoke to Neely. He'd come out of Jimmy and I's room every day, and he would look at the two of us and we'd sniff and go and open the curtains and lift the windows and walk out again, you know. Neely was great for the club. He really was.
Neely was known for being a joker and a prankster. Do you have any memories of this side of his character?
He probably had a couple of great lines in his time, you know. Man, my green dude should never throw tomatoes, you know what I mean? And that song, what was it? My Dolores, Neely was singing Cedar Delilah. It was just a bundle of fun.
And how do you think Neely's role changed as the years progressed?
Neely really went from being the trainer to the kit man, really. And he was always in about the boot room. And then any time he needed in, he went and seen Neely. Neely was just a fixture at the park. You could always go and speak to Neely. I don't really remember, and I'm probably wrong here, but I don't really remember Neely having a day off. Every time you're in, Neely was there. And if you walked in later on, after maybe you stopped playing, and some of the first team about, Neely would say, oh, here's one of the good players coming, you know, and he could embarrass you, put you down, you know.
How important to a club like Celtic is a figure like Neely Mockin, who knows the history and traditions of the club?
I think that's vitally important. I think players come in, modern players, I'm just guessing this, modern players come in and don't know much about the club really. But if you're a guy like Neely about that could, I mean, we John Clatt's there just now, and John's great for the club, I think. And Neely was the same. Neely was always there and always about the place and could always bring you down, you know. He liked to bring you down in a funny way. But as I say, we John's the same.
Where would you rate Neely Mockin in the all-time Celtic greats?
Oh, nearly about high there, I'll tell you that. I think it's hard to say who's this and who's that, but Neely was well up there. Neely was great for our team, Neely was great for our club.
He's looking at the ground and he's looking at the goal and he says, just about here. And I went, what happened just about here? He says, the Coronation Cup final.
As far as I can remember, it was a throw in. The ball was flung in and it just bounced and he just hit it. He took me aside and put me on a spot that was maybe 45 yards from goal.
And Tommy Younger maintained to this day that he got a fingertip and he says Younger never saw it.
He says, the big man was crying, he says, crying.
You know, it's a silly goal, Superman would score, Popeye, you know, but he says, ah, he's around about here, he says, but Younger never saw.
I remember Neely Mockin scoring a goal at Celtic Park for Morton. And somebody had mentioned to him, mentioned to me that in all probability Celtic were interested in him. And eventually he came along.
My first memory was like, I think every supporter maybe my age was when he came. His first three games were at Hampden, won three cups or so. But the Coronation Cup, I was at the final. And the ticket, it was £7.06. For the centre stand, and I was about from here to the fence there off the presentation, and I remember nearly scoring the goal 20 odd yards. But as I said, when you came here to play with Celtic, nearly had it away about 50 yards by the time, you know, he always added yards, you know. And you said, even with the old brown ball, nearly, he says, I could hit it with anything.
I think one thing always was always important to beat Rangers. That was a big factor with Neely, and he obviously played in that 7-1 game as well, one of the most famous sort of all-for-him games ever for a Celtic point of view.
But my greatest memory of Neely as a player was in 1960. They played St Mirren, three cup ties. First game was at Love Street, 1-1 draw. Second game was at Celtic Park, it was a 4-1 draw after extra time. And the third game, Celtic won 5-2, and Neely scored all five goals. Remember what a tremendous personal triumph that was.
I scored four goals. And of course I'm getting took off and I'm thinking, what's he take off? What'd he take me off for? And he's going, pfft. And he just looked at Neely, and Neely's on the bench laughing. You know, and he comes walking in and, you know, you've got to laugh. You know, any normal person would be raging. I knew exactly what he meant, because Neely scored the five, you know, and, you know, you'll never beat me, son.
He probably had a couple of great lines in his time, you know. Man McGreen, who should never throw tomatoes, you know what I mean? And that song, was it? My Dolores, Neely would sing to the Delilah. It was just a bundle of fun.
But I think it's vital. People might, you know, they're bringing maybe foreign managers or foreign players, but there's a lot to be said for the local playing, you know. If you look at Baresi with AC Milan, Puyol with Barcelona, these were locals. These guys, even Man United, Paul Scholes, people like that. People might think the game's changed that a lot, so it has, but I think that part of the bit when things are going against you and in the dressing room, these people are vital.
Evan Williams, what are your memories of arriving at Celtic Park in 1969?
Obviously, I was in loan to Villa from Wolves, and kind of went there, and Newcastle were after me as well, and a short talk with their manager about Ian McFall, and but I knew that Celtic were interested because Big Jock had phoned me a few times, about once before, don't anything, give us a chance to talk to you. And I was, what about, I can remember, I think, the £60-65 a week with Wolves. And Villa were offering over £100 a week, so was Newcastle, which was a lot of money then, 1969. And I was talking to my wife about it. She says, now, what are you doing? I'm going up to Celtic Park on the train today. Make sure you get the same as they've offered you. Because we could, with the sign-on fee, we could have bought two houses. I bought a house and this was debt-free for living. So I come up to the park and Jock met me, took me into the boardroom and sat down. Here's the deal, £50 a week and £1,000. I signed when I heard my wife, you off your head? I says, I've always wanted to play there, and that was it. I always thought if I didn't get a game, I would always go back to England. But it worked out quite well for me, so I can't complain. But playing with the Quality Street gang, that was an education unbelievable. All these young kids, Dalgleish and McGrain and all them, and John Gorman, Jimmy Quinn, Pat McCluskey. You played a game at Kilmarnock, I think it was one of my first games down there. The first half were 5-0 up or something. I'd one kick of the ball the whole first half. I'm saying, what am I going to do? I'm never going to get in the game here and to play the first team. So I says to the boss on Monday morning about it. He just laughed, and that was it, kind of finished. But it was an education playing with the Quality Street game, the quality of players they had.
Did you see the Quality Street kids as heirs to the Lisbon Lions throne?
Well, I would say so, because we used to play them in practice games, and some days they gave us a doing.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And it wasn't as if we were doing well in Europe at the time, couldn't give them a doing. They were up every bit as good as us in a lot of the games, the Barrowfield practice games. I thought they were going to become a lot of top pros.
Now, by the time that Celtic had reached the European Cup quarter-final against Fiorentina, you had established yourself as Celtic's number one. What are your memories of that tie?
Well, at Celtic Park, we won 3-0 and we played very well. But the second game in Florence was one of Jock's nightmares. As he says, he nearly had a heart attack with me. We were 1-0 down at half time, and just after half time, Amarildo, the Brazilian international player, took a free kick for them and bent the ball around the wall. And they came straight to me, and I walked out of the road, and the ball went in the net. So Jock came running around the back of the goal at Florence, and he said, what are you doing? What are you doing? He says, boss, don't worry about it. It's an indirect free kick. It's an indirect free kick. Waking off his head. And after the game, went into the dressing room. We only could beat 1-0, so we qualified for the semi-final. And the referee came in and says, big chairman referee, well done, goalkeeper. Somebody knows the rules of the game. He went out and Big Jock says, all rules of the game, you see, for now, and you don't let any ball pass you. It was bad enough sitting there watching that without you doing things like that.
This victory lined up a Battle of Britain tie against Leeds United. How did you prepare for this game?
I always remember I went down to Troon to train, and I'd played against Leeds United three times with Wolves, and Jackie Charlton, with one game I'd beaten Leeds at Ellen Road, and they got a corner kick in the last minute. Johnny Dale's got over, and Jackie Charlton stood up and stood my boot into my big toe, and he made it 1-3 on a full-time whistle. But that again was a learning period for me as well. And Jock says to me, look, what we're going to do, we're going to stick Billy. When Charlotte stands on top of you, Billy will stand in front of him. I says, boss, that's not good. This area is my area. What do you mean? He says, I've got to go over two of the tallest men in British football to get the ball. And also Charlotte's going to be backing in. I says, that's my... It's up to me to look after Charlotte. And he said, well, you're not playing. You're not doing as you're told. And we left the hotel and went on the train down to Leeds. We were sitting a wee bit kind of downcast, one or two of the boys. We was up and said, well, I've been told I'm not playing. And the sliding door and the old trains opened up. Neely Malkin was there. Boss wants to see you. And along, and then Sean sitting, Neely, Bob Rooney all sitting, Wally Fernie. And Jock says, well, look, he says, you're getting your way, you're playing, but it's on your head if you beat tonight. But the first cross ball I came off, I caught the ball, but I'm right through Charlton, and he never came near me after that.
How important were Davy Hay and George Conley in the victory against Leeds United?
Oh, I think they were fantastic. I think Davy Hay was a great, great defender, great player to play with. He never, not many people could get past Davy, and he was very hard and all. And George was a different class talent. The only thing I didn't like about George was pull the ball down the 6-yard box, trying to nutmeg people. I used to cough my head, but he always got away with it. He never really got caught. A great talent. I thought George was going to go at the top. What happened, we don't know. I thought he was going to be a top class player like Davy, because Davy had a great career up till his injuries.
Do you think it was an error on Jock Steen's part to leave George Conley out of the final?
I would think, being honest, no, he didn't make many mistakes, Jock, and I think George was on fire then. I mean, he was playing great, and that was his decision. And nobody ever questioned Big George's decision, because 99% of the time he was right. But you know, I think he made a wee mistake that night.
What were your memories in the lead up to the final?
Well, I think Celtic had played so many games in Europe in those years. We just went through the same routine of training and did all the things, and they would talk about the game and what we're going to do in that. And we didn't turn up in the night. And this talk about money, that was a load of garbage. I never heard anybody talking about money. And they just think it's one of those things. I think we only got beat two games that season. Was the Scottish Cup final and that game. And just one of these, we didn't turn up at all. I mean, if you talk to anybody, you ever go to your own job and have a bad day? I think the whole team just had a bad day that time.
Was that defeat a watershed moment, and was a decision made to bleed more quality street kids through as a result of that defeat?
I think so. He brought in Kenny, and he brought in Vic Davis in a few games, the first team, and Pat McCluskey came into the team, and Jimmy Quinn had quite a lot of games as well. They started to bring him in a bit at a time, and I think the Wispy and John Hughes got sold off, and Bobby Murdoch went to Middlesbrough, and Berry went to Hibs. Tommy Gemmell waiting to know his forest, so it was all kind of a breaking up period.
How much of a tragedy was it that George Conley was entirely lost to the game?
Well, I think the football world missed a great talent. I think his talent was unbelievable. His reading of the game, his skill in the ball. He was a good player to watch. He wasn't just an out-and-out defender where he marked somebody up on that. He took part in the game. He could score goals, he could dribble past people. I think George did everything. He had the world at his feet. I don't know what happened. That was his own personal thing. But he was a big quiet guy. He wasn't boisterous or anything. He was always very quiet. We've gone very well with him, but we don't know what happened to him.
Had we kept the Quality Street Gang together, what would Celtic have achieved as a club?
I think we would have kept it up there in Europe, because I think we played at that time, they played two finals and four semi-finals. And that's the kind of Inter Milan, Ajax kind of stuff. They were always there or thereabouts. And even you would even feel the English boys would say, we don't want Celtic in the European Cup because we're going to have a hard game. And a lot of teams didn't want to play us, especially Celtic Park. Because our record at Celtic Park was unbelievable in Europe then.
How underrated do you think Paul Wilson was as part of that gang?
I felt sorry for Paul when he didn't break through. As you said earlier, they were a bit later on, 2021, 22, before they got in the first team. But then Paul was unlucky. You had Jimmy Johnson and Bobby Lennox with the wingers. And very, very hard to break those two down. And especially wee Bobby Lennox, he played another 12 years after that or something. He went away and come back and played again and won another two league championship matches. I think Bobby's got 30 or 40 medals with Celtic, which is unsung. Paul was just unlucky, but he ended up having a good career. He's a good player, Paul.
How important was the backroom team to the success of Celtic during the 1960s and 70s?
I've always had a wee thing since I got older and look back at the game. There's too many people coaching in the game that have never played the game at a certain level. But Big Jock's backroom staff all played at top level. They all knew the game inside out, and it was a great mixture. And they weren't a yes sir, no sir, three bags full. You could hear them getting on to each other and discussing it and openly the way they think they should be played. They just didn't sit and say nothing.
What part did Neely Mockin play in that famous boot room?
And Neely was a character. It's he's a great guy. I was a kid. I used to go and watch him. He was a great player. And he was good for Celtic. He was a great go between the players and the boss, and Sean and the boss. And he was always a smile on his face, but he kept on top. He was a very, very strict man as well, and even though he was good ways. He used to always take you a walk at Seamill just after your dinner and go along the road and then come along the beach. And one year we went to Israel and we played the Israeli international team. I think we won 5-0 or something. But the night before the game, after dinner, went for a walk. So went along the road in Tel Aviv, went down onto the beach, climbed these stairs down. This time, dusk comes quick in Israel. It went dark, and we're walking along the beach, and I went, where are we going to be in that? And oh, I've nearly said, just along here. Next minute, all these tanks came, and the army lorries and that, with guns, got off. You weren't allowed on the beach. We were on the beach. We wonder we never get shot. He was always laughing and joking, really, and you know, they'd be going for a walk. Wasn't a wee casual walk. It was a quick walk, because I think he was a great man with the dogs, and he was always walking the dogs 100 mile an hour. It's like going for a run, never mind a walk. And they always loved to patter with the players and talked away. And he always remember in Bermuda once, and the boss went away. We're over on holiday. We played a couple of games. Of course, we'd won the double. He took us over to Bermuda to play these games. And then we'd have 5 days free. So I'm not going to mention the players in the room, but nearly came in one day. Come on, you sneak up. I've arranged another game. And he opened the curtains. He's all this carry out. He says, "I've made a drink there. That's doing in the bar, doing in the hotel room." So we got a row. He says, "Get that out of here." The big man says, "I'll go off his head." But he says, "But we're on holiday, we're just having a couple of beer." He just says, "Oh, get out of the street, get rid of it for us." But he always looked after us.
And of course, he played a part in ensuring that you didn't miss your first match against Rangers.
Well, the boss said to me one day, just 5 weeks after I'd signed, he says, "Right, I'm going to play on Saturday against St Mirren and see how you got on, if you're ready for..." I think he said to John Fallon, "Look, you've been given Evan a game to get..." John was in the team at the time. So I played the at St Mirren and at Clyde, we won 2-0 each game. And the Old Firm game was at Parkhead the next game. So I was in the first team pool. And I just had my two games out, and I stood outside and I'm talking to my two brothers and giving them tickets. Nearly came out, "Oh, get in there, you're backside in there. How? Oh, you're playing. If he knows you're out here and you don't know he's read the team out and you weren't there, you're going to be trouble sitting in." And that's how I learned I was playing against Rangers. And we drew nothing each that day. So it was quite a good start to my career in front of the Celtic fans.
Neely became notorious for hoarding training gear and boots. What are your memories of this trait with Neely?
Obviously somebody's kept you well informed. Always mind when I came up for Wolves. My squad number was 13. And we got this 13 jersey. There's a big hole under here and a hole in the elbow, and I'm saying, "This is the European champions I've seen. We've got this old gear, and the socks weren't the best either." And I said to Bobby Murdoch, "I said, that's just it." He says, "We've always looked like here." And I said, "When I played with Villa there, we had a dress tracksuit and a working tracksuit." And so you're in the telly and about your tracksuit, brand new shoes and all that, and the voice, "You look at that here." But that was just, and Neely used to wind it up, "You're looking smart today," and all that kind of thing.
How important to a club like Celtic is a figure like Neely Mockin, who knows the history and knows what the club is all about.
Neely played with a great Celtic team, you know, at the time. That was the time Jock came on board as a centre-half, and the players, I mean, you could Bonner, Hockney, Fallon, Evans, Steen and Peacock, Higgins, Neely was outside left, Charlie Tully, they're all great players, and Neely was brought up in that kind of way, and the Lisbon Lions were an entertaining team as well. And Neely had a lot to do with the training and the coaching as well. He was always telling things. And I remember one afternoon, I was back doing a bit of extra goalkeeping because I like to do a wee bit extra because we learned in England to do certain things. And he would say, Neely come back, he started shooting in. I never asked him again. Never seen anybody could hit a ball at him in my life. Even at that age, you used to hit it from 30 yards and all, you used to scream.
Where do you regard Neely Mochan in the list of all-time Celtic greats?
Well, Neely's up amongst the best of them. There's no doubt about that. Character, trustworthy, great ability, and could read the game and all that. And he kept us informed. Don't be doing that and don't be doing that. He always said, look, if you're looking out, don't go here and do it there. He's always seemed a step ahead of us. And I remember when we retired, went to a function and Neely was there with his wife, and I think it was through in Denny, near where he stays. And I went to the bar, Neely came out and said, Neely, do you want a drink? A whiskey? He says, but don't let Big Jock say, leave it around the corner then, I'll get it later on. Even then, you know, just he kept his respect for the boss, not to be too much one of the boys, which was good. The boys loved him to bits. He was always happy-go-lucky and talking all the time. And if he'd done something wrong, he would slag you rotten. He didn't get a chance with
Network.